Frank recognized Jubal Embry's voice. He stood there with his shoulders squared.
Take it easy, Embry. She's been wounded, but we didn't do it. We found a couple of men about to attack her and stopped them.
Lies. Again with the lies. I order you off my ranch, and what do? You come back and molest my daughter. By God, I order!
Oh, wait! There are a couple of dead men over here, and I think I recognize them. I've seen them with Brady Morgan.
What? They must all four come over here to our end of the valley, and I'd have fallen out amongst them when they found your sister like that. Good Lord. I told Faye she was just asking for trouble by coming out here to swim in this pool, but she wasn't listening to me. Your sister won't listen to nobody.
Especially not an old buffalo bull like you.
Frank looked around and mingled surprise and relief that the young woman had regained consciousness. Her father's roaring tone must have roused her from her stupor. Faye lifted her head and pushed herself up on an elbow to look down at her body. When she realized that she was still nude, with only her spread-out dress covering her rather inadequately, she clutched at the garment as she tried to make it shield more of her from view.
You men, get out of here! Get out!
You heard her, damn you! Come on, and keep your hands away from those guns!
We're not gonna draw.
Frank walked toward the trees with his hands held in plain view.
We haven't done anything wrong.
As he and Salty entered the trees, several Box-D hands closed in around them, brandishing Winchesters. Jubal Embry came up and jerked Frank's Colt from its holster. Another man disarmed Salty.
I reckon I'll take a whip to you, and then I'll tar and feather you, and then I'll string you both from the highest tree I can find. Buzzards who'd molest a respectable young woman don't deserve no better.
We're not the ones who were trying to hurt your daughter.
Pa, didn't you hear what I told you? There are a couple of Brady's men back there in the trees with bullet holes in them. And I've got a hunch that Frank put those holes in them.
You'd be right about that, sonny. He drilled both those skunks, and it was one of them what fired the shot to crease your sister. One of them gave me this, too, by walloping me with a gun while we were trying to corral him.
I don't believe a word of it. I ordered you off my range. Men who would disobey an order like that would lie, too.
Well, then why did Frank shoot those two?
I told you. They had an argument over what they were going to do to your sister.
Don't talk about me like I'm not here.
Faye strode into the trees, fully dressed now, down to soft leather boots on her feet under the long skirt she wore.
And could you stop shouting, Father? My head hurts, and all the noise is just making it worse.
I'm not surprised your head's sore, Miss Embry. One of the bullets flying around clipped you and knocked you out. You'd better take it easy for a few days. Sometimes head injuries like that can be tricky. I've had my share of them.
Don't bother giving my daughter any advice. I'll send for Doc Hutchinson and Pine Knob. He'll tend to her health.
This man's just trying to help. And he and his friend have told you the truth. If it wasn't for them, there's no telling what might have happened to me.
The four of them weren't all together?
No, that's what they've been trying to tell you. Those other two men came up first and accosted me while I was bathing. And these two showed up and pointed guns at the others and tried to disarm them. That's when the fight started, when I got hurt.
Well, that's what I figured. Frank and Salty were just trying to help.
You're still too damn trusting. It'll get you killed one of these days, if you ain't careful.
Why don't you stop pointing those rifles at these two men? This is getting ridiculous. I've already told you they didn't do anything wrong.
They saw you! Well...
That can't be helped! I'd rather be a little embarrassed than dead.
Salty and I are obliged to you for telling the truth, Miss Embry.
Jubal Embry finally lowered his gun, but he didn't stop glaring.
There's still the matter of you coming back on my range when I told you to clear off and stay gone. What do you have to say about that?
We've been to Pine Knob and found out more about what's been going on around here.
Frank told them about the encounter with Brady Morgan and Gaius Baldridge at the feed barn, and also about their conversation with Katie Storm and Marshall Trask. Frank noticed how Hal perked up at the mention of Katie. The two of them were interested in each other, that was for sure.
So you talk to your son. I don't see how that changes anything.
I'll be honest with you, Mr. Embry. I don't know if Brady Morgan is my son. I suppose he might be. But like I told you before, I never saw or heard of him until today, and I'll stand by that.
Well, then why did you come back?
It looks to us like Baldridge has got you outgunned. And Brady Morgan's already got it in for us. Seems like the best thing for us to do would be to give you folks a hand.
You want me to hire you as regulators?
As men who'll ride for the brand, whatever it takes. But I've done my share of cowboying when I was younger, and I'll wager Salty has too. We can work the range if you need us to.
I've got cowhands, but I don't have hide killers, and I don't intend to. I should have known considering your reputation, mister. You're no better than that no good whelp of yours.
Pa, I think you've got it wrong. They saved Faye.
It ain't your place to do the thinking around here. I'll do that. Unless you're figuring you're man enough to take over the box D and run it better than I can.
I never said that, Pa, and you know it. But I got a right to tell you what I think.
And I got a right to ignore it.
Well, what about me? Are you going to ignore my opinion too, Father?
What are you talking about?
You trust my business sense. Well, I think it would be good business to hire Mr...
Morgan. Frank Morgan. And this is Salty Stevens.
We ain't been formally introduced till now, miss. But it's an honor and a pleasure to meet you.
I imagine it was, considering how I was dressed at the time.
Blasted girl, don't be so familiar with these men. Even if they're not working for Baldridge, they're just drifters, no-account saddle tramps, hired guns.
You can think whatever you want about us, Embry, but you've got to admit it's come in handy having us around today. We helped Hal and those other three hands of yours get out of that bushwhacking without a scratch. And your daughter would have been a lot worse off now if we hadn't come along when we did.
He's right, Father. We owe a debt to Mr. Morgan and Mr. Stevens.
And I promised them a good meal earlier today. A meal they didn't get because you ran them off. Why don't you let them come back to the ranch with us, have some supper, and spend the night? And while they're doing that, well, we can figure out what to do next.
Embry still wore a dark scowl, but he was smart enough to know that at the moment, the game was running against him, Frank thought. After a few seconds, the rancher jerked his head in a curt nod.
All right. We won't horsewhip you, or tar and feather you, or string you up.
We're obliged to you for that.
And I'll feed you and give you beds in the bunkhouse for the night. Nobody's ever said the Jubilebri ain't hospitable, and they ain't gonna start now.
I appreciate that.
But as for letting you hire on, don't count on it, mister. I still don't trust you as far as I can throw you. Even if you're telling the truth, you're liable to wind up on the opposite side from your own son, looking at him over the barrel of a gun. You thought about what you're gonna do if that happens, Morgan?
I have.
The ranch hands who had ridden out with Embry and Hal took charge of the extra horses. When everyone was mounted up, they started back toward the Box D headquarters. Embry had returned their guns to Frank and Salty, which surprised Frank a little. He was grateful for that, though, because he never felt quite right without the weight of the Colt on his hip. Not surprisingly, Embry took the lead, leaving the others to follow him. Frank suspected it was that way in most things the rancher did, but he didn't mind, because it gave him a chance to talk with Hal.
I'm curious about something. How did you and your pa happen to show up out there at that waterfall when there was trouble going on?
Well, one of the hands heard the shots and galloped back to the ranch house. Headquarters is too far away for the sound to travel that far, but we've always got men riding in various parts of this red. After all the problems with Baldridge, and especially after Morgan and his men jumped us earlier today. Well, whenever there's any shooting, we all come a-running.
That makes sense. You believe what we told you about what happened at the pool, don't you?
Well, my sister is a lot of things, Mr. Morgan. But she's not usually a liar. I can't think of any reason why she wouldn't tell us the truth about what happened.
Well, I'm glad to hear you feel that way. By the way, why don't you call me Frank? The name Morgan sort of stirs up bad feelings around here.
Yeah, it's the truth. All right, Frank. Did you say you didn't tell the folks in town who you really are?
That's right. Seemed to me like it would just complicate matters.
And you didn't want Brady to know, did you?
I'm still trying to figure that one out. Like I said, there's a chance he really is my son, even though I never knew about it until today.
Oof. I reckon it'd be pretty hard to gun down your own flesh and blood.
People have done it. I'd just as soon not be one of them, but I won't stand by and let Brady Morgan kill some innocent person.
What if you're the one he's trying to kill?
I'm gonna try to not let it come to that.
When they reached the Box D, the sun wasn't far above the horizon. A woman stood on the front porch of the ranch house, obviously waiting for Embry and Hal and the other men to return from investigating the shots. She was middle-aged, with enough of the same sort of beauty in the lines of her face and her thick brown hair that it was equally obvious she was Faye's mother. She looked like she wanted to rush down from the porch and run to meet them, but she kept that impulse under control.
The girl's all right, Mary. You can see that for yourself.
Well, those two men aren't.
Mary Embry pointed to the two corpses draped over their saddles. The Box D hands had tied them to the horses. Frank wasn't sure what Embry planned to do with them. Mary went on.
What happened, Jubal?
I'll tell you about it in the house, Mother. We don't need to talk about it out here.
Oh, my God. Are you sure you're all right, Faye?
I'm fine. I just want to go inside. Ugh.
Faye stepped onto the porch where her mother had put an arm around her shoulders and led her through the open door. Embry turned to Frank and Salty.
You can put your horses in the corral and your gear in the bunkhouse. There are empty bunks out there. Claim a couple for the night. Gage, I'm putting you in charge of keeping an eye on these two.
Sure, boss.
Hal had already dismounted. Embry swung his lumbering bulk down from the saddle and handed his reins to his son. He went into the house.
Don't take what he says too serious-like. He'll come around.
We're obliged for the hospitality, and the offer to stick around and give you folks a hand still stands.
Better listen to him. This ain't the first range war he's been in the middle of. Now, as for me, I'd just as soon ride on. But I reckon I'll do whatever Frank says.
The hands headed for the corral in the barn. Frank and Salty followed suit, and Gage Carlin showed them where to put their saddles once they'd pulled the hulls off Goldie and the paint and turned the horses into the main corral. Storming the pack house went into the pen, too, and Frank and Salty carried their war bags and supplies into the bunkhouse. Carlin gave them a hand and lingered by the bunks where the newcomers dumped their gear.
On behalf of me and the rest of the crew, I want to thank you fellas for helping Miss Faye. She can be a mite bossy at times, but most of us have watched her grow up, and we're right fond of her.
You believe us about what happened, then?
I heard Hal tell you that Miss Faye's not a liar. I agree. Since her story jives with yours, I reckon you're telling the truth.
What's Embry going to do with those bodies he had you bring in?
He told some of the boys to wrap them up real good and put them down in the root cellar for the night. In the morning, he's going to put them in a wagon and take them to town. He said Marshal Trask can turn them over to Baldridge. Let Baldridge take care of his own trash.
That's liable to stir up even more trouble.
Trouble's already stirred up. Bushwhacking Hal and the rest of this morning was bad enough. But going after the boss's daughter? Storm's going to break now, that's for sure.
You don't think Baldridge sent those men over here to attack Miss Embry, do you? That wasn't the way it sounded to me. I think they showed up on their own.
Well, you gotta remember, I've been around here for quite a spell, and I remember how things used to be. I wouldn't go so far as to say that the boss and Baldridge were amigos, but they got along all right most of the time. Baldridge is a sort of a stuffed shirt. But would he order a couple of gun hawks to ride over here and rape a young woman? I don't think he would. I just don't think so. But he hired the sort of skunks who'd do such a thing.
That's a good point. He has to bear part of the responsibility. I've got another question for you. How did those men know that Miss Embry would be there at that waterfall this afternoon?
Yeah, I don't have an answer for you, Frank. I don't have any idea.
When's supper?
As if someone had been waiting for the question, the sound of a dinner bell being rung floated through the evening air to the bunkhouse. The cowboys headed eagerly for the door.
Miss Embry cooks for the whole crew?
That's right. Boss hires a chuck wagon cook for Roundup when we drive the herd to Great Falls. But the rest of the time, Miss Embry handles the cooking, and she's mighty good at it, like Hal told you.
She'll have to go a ways to beat that fella Solomon at the feed barn in Pine Knob.
Yeah, that crazy old coot can rustle up some mighty good grub. Miss Embry runs him a pretty close race, though.
From what I can see, Hal's a little sweet on that Katie Storm.
Maybe. That gal's got a mind of her own. And she and Miss Faye don't see eye to eye on a lot of things, so I don't figure anything will come of it. Hal generally listens to his sister's advice.
Mary Embry stood next to the iron triangle that hung from the porch roof. The ranch hands took off their hats and nodded politely to her as they trooped in.
How's your daughter doing, Miss Embry?
Yeah, Faye's resting. She doesn't have much of an appetite tonight, so she's not coming down to supper. I'm sure you can understand that.
Yes, ma'am.
Frank, Salty, and Carlin went inside. Carlin led the way to a large dining room dominated by a long table that practically filled it up. The center of the table was covered with platters heaped high with food. Frank saw fried chicken, roast, and ham, along with greens, potatoes, bowls of still-steaming biscuits, thick chunks of butter, gravy, molasses, and pots of stew. Mary Embry must have cooked all day to put together a spread like this, although some of the food could have been left over from the midday meal. Jubal Embry sat at the far end of the table, reminding Frank of pictures he had seen in books of English kings. The table wasn't round, and these rough cowboys weren't exactly knights, but the comparison wasn't that much of a stretch. Cattle barons like Embry ruled their spread sort of like feudal monarchs. Except for Embry, all the men stood up when Mary came into the room. She motioned them back into their seats and took the empty chair at the near end opposite her husband. None of the men had started filling their plates yet, so Frank figured they were waiting for something.
Will you please say grace, Jubal?
Embry looked a little pained by the request, but he heaved himself to his feet as everyone else at the table bowed their heads.
Lord, thank you for this bounty you've put before us, and the good friends we're about to share it with. Bless us and this food, and thank you for watching over my children today when they were in danger. Thank you for sending these strangers to share our hospitality and protect us from wolves in our fold. Amen.
Mary frowned at him as everyone looked up, but Embry seemed not to see her.
Dig in, boys.
That was a good prayer, Mr. Embry. Especially that last part.
You think so, do you?
That's right. Of course, it helps if you know who the real wolves are.
The night passed quietly on the Box D, and when Frank and Salty went into the ranch house the next morning, they found that Mary Embry was just as talented with breakfast as she was with the day's other meals. Salty waxed eloquent about how good the flapjacks were, and Frank thought the coffee was some of the best he'd had in a long time. Jubal Embry was still surly, and Faye didn't come down for breakfast, although Mary mentioned that she had taken a tray up to her daughter and that Faye's appetite was back.
Hal, I want you to pick three of the men and take those carcasses into town.
You still intend to turn them over to Marshal Trask? Can't we just bury them here?
I'll not profane our burying ground by planting those two polecats in it. They're Baldridge's men. Let Baldridge take care of them.
They're probably getting a little ripe by now, even after being kept in the root cellar overnight. And they'll be worse by the time we get them to town.
That's Baldridge's problem. Are you going to do what I told you to do or not?
Sure, Paul. I always do, don't I? I should pick three men to go with me, you said?
That's right.
Then I'll take Frank, Salty, and Gage.
Blasted, I meant three of our men, and you know it. Morgan and Stevens don't count.
We'd be glad to go, and since I'm the one who shot those fellas, the Marshal's liable to want to talk to me, even if it did happen outside his jurisdiction.
Frank's right, Paul. And besides, if they come with me, well, that frees up two of the other hands for their regular work.
All right, take them. That means I won't have to look at them for a while.
The men went out to the corral a short time later.
That's just how I wanted to spend my morning. Playing nursemaid to a couple of decomposing gun wolves.
Maybe we can stop and have dinner at the feed barn while we're in Pine Knob.
Seems like the bullets fly a hell of a lot in this part of the country. But I gotta admit, there's good eating everywhere you look.
Hal hitched a team of draft horses to the ranch wagon and drove it over to the root cellar's entrance.
You three will be outriders. I'll handle the wagon.
Salty wrinkled his nose when one of the ranch hands lifted the cellar door.
Phew, them varmints are a mite fragrant already.
Better get used to it. It'll get worse before we get to town. Is there an undertaker in Pine Knob, Hal?
Yep, and I don't envy him his job. Whew, not one little bit.
They got the blanket-shrouded shapes into the back of the wagon. Hal climbed to the seat and took the reins again. He turned the team toward the settlement and got the horses moving. Frank and Salty rode on one side of the vehicle as it rolled along the trail, Gage Carlin on the other. Since the Box D had been invaded twice the previous day by forces from the B-Star, the four men kept a close watch on the rugged, beautiful landscape about them. Brady Morgan and some of the other regulators might try to set up another ambush. Frank knew that if that happened, he would fight back along with the others without any consideration of whether or not Brady might be his son. Salty was his friend, and now Hal and Carlin were too, and he would do his best to protect them. Nothing happened on the way to Pine Knob, though, except that the bodies on the back of the wagon began to stink even worse, as Frank had known they would. Growing up on a ranch, he had experienced the smell of dead animals at an early age. Not until he was in the war, though, had he encountered the stench of thousands of dead men littering a battlefield. The man never forgot that experience, although the lucky ones were able to put it aside and not dwell on it. In the more than three decades since then, death had followed Frank enough that, while not exactly friends, He and the Grim Reaper had to be considered close acquaintances. When they reached the settlement, the citizens of Pine Knob who were on the street cast curious glances at them. Then some of the townspeople grimaced as they caught a whiff of what was in the back of the wagon. The vehicle rattled across the bridge over Loco Creek. Hal brought it to a stop in front of a frame building with a sign on it that read, Finnegan's Undertaking Establishment, Omar Finnegan, Proprietor.
Gage, ride on down to the marshal's office and let him know what we've got here.
Carlin nodded and trotted his horse along Main Street. Hal set the brake, looped the reins around the lever, and climbed down from the seat while Frank and Salty dismounted and tied their horses to a hitch rack. A mostly bald man with a fringe of gray and red hair around his ears appeared in the doorway of the undertaking parlor.
Is it some work ye have for me, young Embry?
That's right, Mr. Finnegan. Two men.
Take them around back, if ye would. We'll unload them there.
All right. I never delivered any bodies before. I wasn't sure where we were supposed to take them.
Finnegan looked curiously at Frank and Salty, as if recognizing that they weren't regular boxed E hands.
I am glad you brought some help with ye. My assistant's not here right now, and we can use the extra hands.
Hal climbed back onto the wagon and drove it around behind the building. Frank and Salty walked along the alley rather than untying their horses and mounting up again. Finnegan went through the undertaking parlor and met them at the back door.
I ain't too fond of this.
Salty and Frank lifted one of the corpses to carry it into the undertaking parlor.
Carrying a dead body ain't very good luck.
Better than being carried.
Well, I reckon I can't argue about that. But I still don't count to it.
They took the corpses into Finnegan's spacious back room, which had several coffins stacked along the wall, and a couple of tables where he did his work. They had just placed the bodies on the tables when Marshal Roy Trask came through the building from the front room, followed by Gage Carlin.
What's this all about? Who are these men?
We don't know their names, Marshal, but I've seen them with Brady Morgan. Pretty sure they work for Baldridge.
Let's take a look.
Before I have a chance to prepare them, Marshal?
Right now.
Finnegan shrugged and undid the lashings that held the blankets around the bodies. He pulled the blankets back to uncover faces that were gray and doughy in death. Trask studied the dead men for a moment, then motioned for Finnegan to pull the blankets back into place.
I've seen them before, too. And you're right, Hal, they were with Brady Morgan. I guess that makes Gaius Baldridge responsible for the cost of burying him, Omar.
I'll make a note of that.
Are you going to send a rider out to the Beastar with the news?
First of all, I want somebody to tell me what happened to these men.
I shot him.
Don't think I didn't notice that you're back browning. I told you and that old pelican with you to get out of Pine Knob, and I don't like it when folks ignore me.
We left like you told us, but you didn't say anything about not going back to the Box D. When we did, we found these two about to attack Miss Faye Embry. There's a good chance they would have killed her, too. When Salty and I stepped in to put a stop to it, they put up a fight.
And you gunned them both down?
That's right.
One of those hombres was called Royal, the other was Dodge. Supposed to be pretty slick on the draw, both of them.
Not slick enough. One of them walloped me with a pistol and gave me this goose egg. You ask me, I say they got what was coming to them.
I hope you're not thinking about causing trouble for Frank here, Marshal. I'm convinced he saved my sister's life.
If this happened on the Box D, there's nothing I can do about it. I just wanted to get the facts straight for when I talked to Gaius Baldridge.
You going to send for him?
I don't have to. He's already in town. He's waiting for the stagecoach that ought to be rolling in pretty soon.
He's leaving town?
I don't think so. He doesn't have any bags. More like he's waiting for somebody.
More hired guns, probably.
Could be. As long as they don't try anything in town, it's none of my business. I'll go find Baldridge and let him know what happened. Last time I saw him, he was over at the stage station waiting.
Was Brady Morgan with him?
No, just a couple of the regular B-Star hands brought the buckboard in. Baldridge drove his buggy himself.
I'm sort of curious to see who Baldridge is meeting on that stagecoach, if that's what's going on. You need us for anything else, Mr. Finnegan?
The undertaker shook his head. The four of them walked through the undertaking parlor's front room and stepped onto the porch. The stagecoach station was located diagonally across the street. Marshal Trask was walking toward it, not getting in any hurry. Clearly, he wasn't looking forward to breaking the news to Gaius Baldridge.
Does the stage road go right past the B-Star?
No, it comes up from the south, through Granite Pass, about halfway between here and Baldridge's headquarters.
That's why you had to come here to meet the stage then, instead of just having it stop at his ranch.
That's right. After the road turns south, there's still a good trail onto the B-Star, but it's not good enough for a coach.
Marshal Trask stayed back out of the way as the stagecoach pulled up in front of the station. Guys Baldridge emerged from the building. Frank saw a fancy black buggy parked not far away, along with a buckboard, and knew those vehicles had to belong to Baldridge. The rancher had to be meeting someone, as Trask suspected. Baldridge would carry the new arrival out to the ranch in the buggy, while the cowhands he had brought with him would load up the person's bags on the buckboard. After Frank could figure that out, he wasn't surprised when the station master opened the coach door and helped a woman climb down from the vehicle. Baldridge waited on the boardwalk with a welcoming smile on his face.
Laura, it's good to see you again. You look as beautiful as ever. No, more beautiful.
The woman stepped onto the boardwalk and took both the hands Baldridge extended to her. She wore a blue traveling gown with a hat of the same shade perched on honey-colored curls. Frank couldn't see her face, but as he hooked his thumbs in his belt and leaned a shoulder against one of the posts holding up the awning over the undertaken parlor's porch, he thought that the woman had a nice shape in that blue dress. Laura, Baldridge had called her. Frank frowned. Something about that name and the woman's shape. Something. She leaned forward and let Baldridge kiss her cheek. Then she stepped back and turned so she could look around the town. As she did, she glanced across the street and at the four men on Finnegan's porch. Her gaze started to move on, but she stopped short and looked back at them. Frank felt the same shock of recognition. He straightened from his casual pose as the woman stepped to the edge of the boardwalk.
Frank? Frank Morgan? Is that really you?
Marshal Trask heard the words as clearly as Frank did. His head snapped around toward the undertaking parlor.
Morgan? You said your name was Browning. But you're...
Frank stepped down from the porch.
Stay here.
Not hardly. I want a ringside seat for this.
Salty hurried to keep up as Frank strode across the street. Hal and Carlin came along, too.
Sorry for lying to you, Marshal. I just wanted to find out a little more about what was going on around here before I let on who I really am.
Then you're really Frank Morgan, the gunfighter? Brady Morgan's father?
One of those things, anyway. Not sure about the other.
He walked on toward the stage station where the woman called Laura smiled at him and Gaius Baldridge stood with a puzzled, surprised look on his face.
Oh, Frank! Oh, I never expected to see you here.
That goes for me, too. You're as lovely as you ever were.
Oh, now you're just being gallant. Oh, not that I don't appreciate it.
It was the truth, Frank thought. Laura Donnelly had been a breathtakingly beautiful young woman when he had known her, but the years had been more than kind to her. Her hair was still thick and lustrous, her blue eyes as bright and sparkling as ever, and her figure remained the sort that would make any man sit up and take notice. Time had added a few lines to her face, but they were the sort that merely enhanced her beauty and gave it character, rather than detracting from it.
Laura Donnelly. I don't believe it.
It's not Laura Donnelly any longer. I'm Laura Wilcoxon now. Mrs. Laura Wilcoxon.
You're married?
Widowed.
Baldridge moved up beside her and lightly laid a hand on her arm in a possessive fashion.
That's right. Mrs. Wilcoxon is here to visit my ranch. And her son.
Frank stiffened as the implications of Baldridge's words went through him.
Your son?
That's right, Frank. Brady is my son. And yours.
San Antonio, Texas, 1872.
Lay your bets, gentlemen.
Laura Donnelly toyed with the deck of cards in her hands. She looked at the man seated directly across the table from her and went on.
Anything else you'd like to lay, cowboy?
Frank Morgan leaned back in his chair and grinned.
I've anteed up, ma'am. I'll wait and see what the cards bring.
Laura returned his smile and dealt, her long, slender fingers spinning the cards to the players around the table with deftness and speed. Frank had drifted into San Antonio a few days earlier after a dust-up with some Mexican bandits down around Laredo. And from the moment he had stepped into the Caballo Rojo saloon and seen Laura Donnelly dealing cards, he'd been interested in her. He had sat in on several games, introduced himself to her, and bought her a few drinks. She seemed to like him, but there was a certain coolness about her. A woman who looked like her in her line of work probably was accustomed to keeping most men at arm's length. But he thought she was warming up to him, and he thought that maybe, just maybe, tonight would be the night she would consent to having a late supper with him in her room upstairs. The Caballo Rojo was in downtown San Antonio, not far from the murky, twisting river and the old mission where a small group of stubborn Texicans had held off the Mexican army for almost 2 weeks before being slaughtered. Frank liked San Antonio. The town had a sleepy quality to it that was very restful, especially for a man who, in a few short years, had gotten used to the roar of guns and the acrid bite of powder smoke in the air. He was a conservative poker player, never winning or losing much, but enjoying the game. Tonight, though, the cards seemed to be running his way, and even though he didn't place big bets, the pile of greenbacks in front of him kept growing. Other players came and went, but Frank and Laura continued playing, along with one other man who had been in the game from the start. He was a hawk-faced cattle buyer named Russell, and he lost about as steadily as Frank won. The hour was growing late when Laura gathered in the cards at the end of a hand.
That'll be all for this evening, gentlemen. A lady needs her beauty sleep, you know.
They all stood up when she did, and except for Frank and Russell, the men began to drift away from the table, most of them heading for the bar and a fresh drink. Since his growing reputation as a gunman had forced him to leave his home several hundred miles north of there and become a drifter, Frank had learned that when a man wanted something, he had to seize the opportunity to get it.
It would be my honor to have dinner with you, Miss Donnelly.
It's pretty late, cowboy. I don't think I feel like going out to some restaurant.
I thought maybe we could have some food sent up to your room.
Oh, you did you? That sounds intriguing.
Frank came around the table and held his arm out to her. She hesitated, but only for a second, and then linked her arm with his. They started toward the stairs, leaving Russell behind them at the table, where he stood watching them with a glare on his dark, narrow face.
Morgan!
Frank stopped and turned as Russell walked quickly to the bottom of the staircase.
You want something, mister?
You got a lot of my money in your pocket, and what you don't have, that Jezebel with you does.
I think you owe the lady an apology.
Oh, I don't owe her anything, and I don't think she's a lady. I saw the looks you two have been giving each other all night. She's just a damn tin horn in cahoots with a two-bit gunman to cheat all the honest men dumb enough to sit down at a table with her.
Men started to scramble out of the way, convinced that bullets would be flying any second now.
Mister, we'll settle this.
How?
Russell pulled his coat back to reveal that he wasn't wearing a gun.
I'm not packing an iron. You shoot me, Morgan, and it'll be murder. With this many witnesses, the Rangers will hang you for sure.
Forget it, Frank. He's not worth it. Let's go upstairs.
That's right. Go upstairs with your whore.
Russell, you better be gone when I come back downstairs.
Contemptuously, Frank turned his back on the man and started up the stairs again toward Laura.
Frank, look out!
Russell charged up the stairs, but Frank was ready for this. Frank picked up his hat where it had fallen on the floor, slapped it against his thigh a couple of times, and went up the stairs to join Laura again.
Sorry about the commotion.
You were just defending yourself. And me. I can't hold that against you. Shall we?
We shall.
Laura looked at him from the boardwalk in front of the stagecoach station in Pine Knob, Montana.
Let me guess. You're remembering a certain night in San Antonio? The Caballo Rojo Saloon?
The Red Horse.
And it was quite a ride, wasn't it? Oh, those were good times, Frank.
Good times indeed, Frank thought. He had spent several weeks in San Antonio with Laura, and they were passionate weeks. Cut short only when a couple of young firebrands who wanted to prove how fast on the draw they were threw down on him in front of the old mission. Both of those young men had died there, leaking gore onto ground that might well have been watered by the blood of Texican patriots 36 years earlier. Until that happened, the local authorities had been tolerating the presence of a notorious gunman in their town. Less than 24 hours after the fight, a A large group of deputies armed with shotguns had called on Frank at his room in the Menger Hotel and suggested strongly that he leave San Antonio behind him. He had refused, even though he knew it might mean more trouble, and gone to the Caballo Rojo to warn Laura that all hell might be breaking loose. She was gone. Her room was empty, and Pedro told Frank that she had cleared out earlier in the day. She had heard about what was going to happen and decided that she couldn't afford to be involved with him anymore. That was the only explanation Frank could think of. And with Laura gone, there was nothing to hold him there. He rode out less than an hour later. In the years since then, he had been back to San Antonio many times, but he had never seen Laura Donnelly again. Until now.
Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you tell me about the boy?
I didn't know when I left San Antonio, Frank. You can choose whether to believe me or not, but it's the truth. Later, when I realized, I didn't know where you were. Over the years, I heard stories about you many times, and yes, I probably could have looked you up, but there really didn't seem to be any point to it.
Except that I had a...
Frank stopped. This was like what had happened when he was reunited with Virginia Browning after many years apart and found out about Conrad. And how did that work out?
My dear, we really should be going. It'll take a couple of hours to reach the ranch. I'm sure you're already tired from your journey and would like to settle in and freshen up.
You're right, guys. I am tired. Too tired to go on to the B-Star today, I think. I know it means changing our plans, but if there's a decent hotel here in Pine Knob, I believe I'll take a room there and rest for a day or two before I go on out to your ranch.
But I brought my buggy and men with the buckboards for your bags.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just didn't know I would be quite so exhausted by the trip so far.
Baldridge looked at Frank. His eyes burned with anger and resentment.
I don't believe it's exhaustion that's caused this change in your plans.
Are you calling me a liar, Gaius?
Of course not. And of course I respect your decision. The men can come back with the buckboard tomorrow.
I may not have recovered enough by then.
Then they can come every day if necessary. As for myself, I'll be here, ready whenever you are.
You're not going back to the ranch?
I'll take a room at the hotel as well. The Territorial House isn't the sort of fine accommodations to which you're accustomed, I'm sure. But it's reasonably comfortable.
All right, if that's what you want to do.
It is.
I'm sure I'll see you around town again, Frank.
No offense, ma'am, but I wouldn't be too sure about that. I don't think I much like the idea of having a gunman like Frank Morgan in my town.
That's not fair, Marshal. You let Brady Morgan come into town anytime he wants.
That's different.
I don't see how. Brady's a hired killer.
I'll thank you to keep a civil tongue in your head, Embry. Remember, this lady is Brady Morgan's mother.
I'm sorry, ma'am. I meant no offense to you, but facts are facts.
And who are you?
Hal Embry, ma'am. My father owns the Box D.
What he means is his father has made a spurious, illegal claim on land that belongs to me.
Hal's jaw tightened and he stepped forward. Trask moved to get in front of him and held up both hands.
All right. That's enough of this. Hal, you've taken care of the business that brought you to town. Why don't you head on back out to the ranch?
That's right. The business that brought us to town. Dropping off the bodies of two dead B-Star gun wolves at the Undertaker's.
What are you talking about? Two of my men are dead?
Royal and Dobbs. They're over at Finnegan's. I expect you'll be getting a bill from Omar for their planting.
My God. What happened?
Morgan shot him.
Then I expect you to do your duty, Marshal, and arrest this man immediately. I want him charged with murder.
First of all, it happened out of my jurisdiction, so I'm not arresting anybody.
And Frank killed them because they were about to rape my sister. Sorry about speaking so plain, ma'am.
Laura nodded, but didn't say anything.
Well, I simply don't believe it. Dobbs and Royal were good men. They wouldn't have done such a thing.
Sounds like he's calling you a liar, Frank.
He's calling my sister a liar, too. Faye backed up everything Frank and Salty told us. The question is, did you order them to do it, Baldridge?
If I was 20 years younger, I'd answer that impudent question with a thrashing, Embry.
Settle down. Settle down. Everybody just calm down. Mr. Baldridge, why don't you show Mrs. Wilcoxon to the hotel? How you and your men going back to the ranch? There's been enough squabbling for now.
Oh, this is more than a squabble, Marshal. I consider the killing of my riders an act of war.
I don't care what you consider it. You'd better keep it out of town. That goes for the Box D, too.
We're not going to start any trouble, but we'll be damn sure to defend ourselves. You can count on that.
Trask stood between the two sides, looking back and forth at them and glowering until Baldridge took Laura's arm.
Come with me, my dear. I'll show you to the Territorial House.
Pa will be expecting us back. We might as well head that way.
Frank looked at Laura, walking away arm in arm with Gaius Baldridge. She glanced back over her shoulder at him.
You fellas go ahead. I'll be along later.
No such thing. I ain't leaving you here in town with nobody to watch your back, Frank. Not when there's a snake under just about every rock.
I thought you were going to throw in with us, Mr. Morgan. Your gear and your other horses are still out at the ranch. Yeah, but I guess since it looks like Brady Morgan really is your son, and he's working for the other side...
That's not it. I still don't have any use for hired guns.
Well, that sounds a mite strange coming from you, Morgan. And I don't want you here either. You're just trouble waiting to happen.
I haven't broken any laws in your town, Marshal. And the last I heard, this was still a free country.
And we ain't at dinner yet either.
That's right. And I could do with the surrounding before we get back to the Box D. How about you, Gage?
Whatever you say, boss.
All right, fine. Go get your dinner. But if any ruckuses start while you're here in town, you're gonna be damned sorry you didn't listen to me.
We're not gonna start any ruckuses, Marshal.
Well, we might finish one or two if we have to.
Trask glared at them, then walked away, shaking his head.
That last comment probably didn't help any.
I can't abide a fence sitter. Sooner or later, that fellow's gonna have to figure out which way he wants to hop.
The four men started toward the feed barn. There wasn't any question about where they were gonna eat. It was a little early for the midday meal, but the cafe was already busy, which was a testament to Solomon Storm's cooking and Katie's abilities as a hostess. She didn't smile in welcome when the four of them came in. She locked gazes with Hal for a second, then glanced away. When she looked at them again, she had regained her composure. They took seats at the counter.
Hello, Katie. You look mighty nice today.
Save the flowery talk. And you? No gunfights today.
Unless I'm forgetting something, there weren't any gunfights in here yesterday.
No, but there could have been. I'm just warning you. My uncle and I won't put up with any trouble.
Won't be no trouble today. That Brady Morgan fella ain't in town.
Katie looked past them, her gaze evidently drawn by something she had spotted through the front windows.
You're wrong about that, Mr. Stevens. He just rode in.
Frank turned to look past the yellow curtains that were pushed back over the front windows. He caught a glimpse of several men riding past the cafe, but didn't really get a good look at them, so he stepped over to the closest window.
Blast it. I had my stomach set for more of that good grub.
Brady Morgan rode at the head of four other men, Frank saw. They clattered across the Loco Creek Bridge into the western part of town and pulled rein in front of Corrigan's casino. They dismounted and went inside, with Brady still in the lead, slapping aside the bat wings. As the gunman disappeared into the saloon, Frank turned away from the window.
You're still going to get your dinner, Salty. They're not looking for us.
Frank thumbed his hat back, smiled across the counter at a worried-looking Katie Storm.
We'll have four plates of whatever your uncle's got on the bill of fare today.
Four bowls, you mean? Irish stew.
Bring it on.
Katie nodded and went out to the kitchen.
The condemned men are going to get a hearty meal anyway. You know Brady Morgan going to hear about what happened. When he does, he ain't going to be happy about it.
I know.
Appears to me you got some thinking to do, Frank.
Nope. If Brady starts anything, we'll handle it. Whatever it takes.
Katie came out of the kitchen carrying two bowls of Irish stew as well as plates with large chunks of cornbread on them. She set the food in front of Hal and Carlin, then returned to the kitchen for the other two meals.
Mm. Your uncle outdid himself today, miss. This is mighty good.
Oh, thank you.
Katie was looking out the window.
Uh-oh. Brady Morgan's heading this way, and he don't look happy.
Those words started a mass exodus. Katie's lips thinned as she watched the customers disappear out both front and back doors.
No offense, Mr. Browning. I mean, Mr. Morgan. But you're bad for business. Unless it's Omar Finnegan's business, that is.
I'm sorry about that, Miss Storm.
Frank took a double eagle out of his pocket and slid the $20 gold piece across the counter to her.
Maybe this'll help make up for it.
I guess I'd better collect while I still can.
Salty, Hal, and Carlin frowned at the comment, but a grin split Frank's face.
That's the practical way to look at it, all right. We'll do this outside. No point in risking a lot of damage in here.
The other three men were right behind Frank as he headed for the door. Pausing with his hand on the knob, he looked back at them.
This is my fight, fellas, not yours.
You know better than that, Frank.
Yeah, I suppose I do.
Brady and the other men stayed on their horses. They were all the same sort of lean, cold-eyed gunslingers Frank had seen many times before. Brady's face was flushed as if he had been drinking before they ever got to Pine Knob and went to Corrigan's place.
I hear you're my pa. I reckon that means you lied to everybody yesterday when you said your name was Browning.
I figured it wouldn't hurt anything to be a mite careful until I knew what was going on around here. Now I know.
And what is it that you know?
That Caius Baldridge has some mighty sorry hombres working for him. Two of them were about to molest a young woman yesterday, until I stopped them.
We've got only your word that happened. Dobbs and Royal wouldn't do such a thing.
My sister tells the same story as Mr. Morgan here. I heard her with my own ears, and Faye wouldn't lie.
Sure she would! She was acting like a slut and lured those two fellas over there to get killed.
Hold it.
Why, Frank, these varmints have been wanting a showdown. I say we give them one.
There's not gonna be any shooting. Brady, you may not know this, but your mother is in town.
She is? I knew she was coming. But I saw the buggy in the buckboard and figured the stage hadn't gotten here yet.
Frank glanced down the street at the stagecoach station. The Concord was gone. It had already rolled out of Pine Knob on its return trip to Great Falls.
She's here. She's decided to spend a day or two at the Territorial House before going out to Baldridge's ranch.
I wonder why.
You'd have to ask her that. She said she was tired, and I don't have any reason not to believe her.
Where are the bodies?
Over at Finnegan's.
Brady turned his head to look at the other men.
Go talk to the Undertaker. Make sure he understands that Royal and Dobbs get the best treatment he can give them, got it? And Baldridge is paying.
Brady, we gotta do something about this.
I told you what you're gonna do, damn it! Now move!
The men didn't look too happy about it, but they turned their horses and rode slowly toward the Undertaking parlor, leaving Brady to face Frank and his three companions alone.
Don't think I give a damn that you're my father.
The thought never crossed my mind.
I don't know you, and I don't want to know you. All you ever gave me was a rep to live up to. I done it too. Maybe I haven't killed as many men as the famous Frank Morgan, but my day's coming, old man. My day's coming.
Frank didn't say anything. After a few more seconds, Brady jerked his horse around and cruelly raked its flanks with his spurs.
Frank, you're gonna have to kill that boy sooner or later.
I'm afraid you may be right, Salty. Right now, though, let's go finish that stew before it cools off anymore. Don't want Miss Storm having to feed us twice every time we come in.
The four men turned toward the front door of the cafe, but they hadn't reached it when more hoofbeats suddenly pounded in the street. Frank looked around and saw that the four men who had come to town with Brady hadn't gone to the Undertaking Parlor after all. Instead, they were charging toward the feed barn with guns in their hands. Frank's Colt was already in his hand. As if swatted out of the saddle by a giant hand, a man went backwards off his horse as Frank's bullet drove into his chest. One of the other men reacted automatically and jerked his horse aside to keep the animal from trampling the fallen man. That sudden swerve caused the horse to lose its footing. Hal and Carlin had their guns out by now and were returning the fire, but Frank didn't think they were hitting anything. He half-turned and aimed at one of the two men still on horseback. The gunman dropped his revolver and slewed around as he clutched at a bullet's shattered shoulder. That left just one man mounted, and by now he was probably wishing he and his companions hadn't decided to disregard Brady's orders and try to avenge Royal and Dobbs anyway. He tried to pull his horse around, but Hal and Carlin finally found the range. That left the man who had been thrown clear when his horse fell, and as Frank turned to look for him, he heard Salty's heavy old revolver boom.
I'll teach you.
Frank stepped down from the porch and moved quickly between the gunmen on the ground, kicking their weapons out of reach if any of them proved not to be dead. That didn't appear to be the case, however. All of them lay limp and lifeless. The man with the busted shoulder sat slumped in his saddle, clutching the injury. Frank caught Salty's eye and nodded toward the man, indicating that the old-timer should watch him to make sure he didn't try anything.
Katie!
Hal plunged toward the door of the feed barn, obviously having just realized the bullets that had shattered the windows might have gone on to do some damage inside.
Gage, go give him a hand.
The cowboy nodded and hurried into the cafe as if the fact that Frank had given him an order didn't bother him at all.
Got company coming from two directions, Frank.
I see him.
Frank had already spotted Roy Trask trotting toward the cafe from the marshal's office. Trask had the double-barreled shotgun in his hands again. Brady Morgan emerged from the territorial house, and when he saw his men lying in the street, he broke into a run.
Damn it! What did I say about starting a ruckus?
We didn't start it.
But like I told you, Marshal, we darn sure finished it.
What the hell happened here?
Maybe you better ask your men about that, Brady. They're the ones who opened the ball.
What is this, Lou? I told her for you to go talk to the Undertaker.
Yeah, but Peavy wouldn't stand for it, Brady. He said we'd had to even the score for Royal and Dobbs. Nobody around here would respect us anymore if we didn't, he said.
So now three more men are dead. These killings took place in town, Marshal. What are you going to do about them?
I guess I'm going to have to arrest these fellas until we can straighten everything out.
It's a clear-cut case of self-defense as you'll ever see. And if you ask around town, I'm sure you can find plenty witnesses who agree.
Yeah, but I could probably find just as many who'd say you and your friends started the whole thing, Morgan. Besides, there's no getting around the fact that if the four of you had ridden out of town when I told you to, none of this would have happened. Where the Embry boy and Gage Carlin, anyway?
Right here, Marshal.
Hal led Katie onto the porch with an arm around her shoulders. She looked pale and shaken, and she had a blood-stained cloth wrapped around her left hand. Gage Carlin and Solomon Storm followed them out.
Good Lord! How bad are you hurt, Miss Storm? Do we need to fetch Doc Hutchinson?
Oh, it's just a little cut from the flying glass, Marshal. It could have been a lot worse. I was standing fairly close to the window when the shooting started and it broke. I saw those gunfighters attack these men, if you need a witness to what happened.
So you saw the whole thing, did you?
That's right, she did, and so did I. It happened just like Katie told you, you no good two-bit tin badge. Why, if you were any sort of a lawman, you'd hang that whole bunch of killers who worked for Baldridge, starting with that one.
Solomon pointed at Brady Morgan.
Why, you mangy buzzard, I'll...
You won't do anything, Morgan. You won't do anything except take your man down to the doc's office. That shoulder's gonna need a sawbones to patch it up.
All right. But what about the ones who were killed?
I'll see to it that they're taken over to Finnegan's and things are handled properly.
Fine.
I'd be much obliged if you fellas had holster those guns.
You're not gonna try and take them away from us?
I believe you about what happened. But there'll have to be an inquest, and you'd better be there, all four of you. So plan on riding back into town tomorrow morning.
And if we don't?
Then there'll be a warrant out for your arrest the next time you set foot in the town limits. So unless you plan on never coming to Pine Knob again, Embry, I suggest you do like you're told.
We'll be here, Marshal. You got my word on it.
Fine. Now will you get out of town like I asked you to an hour before all this hell broke loose?
Might as well. I'm sure our dinner is cold by now. And I don't reckon Miss Katie needs to be worrying about dishing up some more for us.
Are you going to be all right?
Of course. It's my left hand. I can bandage it just fine. Solomon can help me if I need him to. We'll be open again for supper.
Well, if you're sure. But you need to take care of yourself. That cut bled pretty bad.
I'm more worried about getting that window repaired. A new pane of glass will have to be freighted up from Great Falls. Or maybe even from Helena. In the meantime, I guess I can get Danny Kyle to board it up. He's the town handyman.
You ought to make Baldridge pay for it. When you get right down to it, he's responsible for what happened here. He's the one who brought those gunmen into the valley.